This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
Smart people can get that back. People who grind and hustle and get around the right people, you can always get the money back as a tool. But if you just chasing the money and you ruining relationships on the way, man, you can't get the relationships back chasing that money.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to another fabulous episode of the Color of Money podcast. I am joined by my two co-hosts, Emrick Peace, Bo Menkiti, and of course, I'm Julia Lachey. And we have on a special guest. We got a hometown hero from my hometown on with us today. We got Corey Wright, none other than Corey Wright. I thought I had a bio I was going to read on you, Corey, but I think it might be better if you just get to telling us your story, because right before we went live, you started talking about yourself and it sounded good. It sounded better than anything I was going to read. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to our audience. Tell us who you are, where you're from, why you're here, all the things.
First of all, thank you for having me, man. I love being on stuff like this. I love being on podcasts, sharing the journey. I think that's what it's about. So I want to thank Unc, Bo, Julia, man. Thank you. This is love right here. But again, my name's Corey Wright, born and raised north side of Minneapolis here in Minnesota. Yep. Yeah, north side. I don't live north side no more, but born and raised north side. My dad grew up north side. My mom grew up in a small town in South Dakota. So my dad grew up in the projects that they tore down to put in a highway. So that's like my backdrop to my family. And my mom grew up on a farm and somehow they came together. My dad moved out the projects, went to school in South Dakota, met my mom. And hey, that's where I came from. Right. So that's why don't let the light skin fool you, man. I got some history in here. But growing up, you know, I did grow up north side. I grew up kind of a lost kid because of the color of my skin. Right. So I was trying to figure out where I wanted to go. And at that time, I had an idea of what being black was. So when I looked in the mirror, I didn't see black. You know, all my friends around me were black. I was multicultural, man. My cousin is Asian black. Boy, look like Tiger Woods right now. My brother-in-law, Hispanic, right? So I grew up around just every culture, rich, poor, whatever it is. But growing up, I thought black was a certain thing. And the people I was around that were black, unfortunately, were running the streets, a lot of drugs, crimes, all the stuff you talk about. And I thought that's what black was. And I'm like, I'm going to try and prove that I'm black. Right. So I went into all the trappings, you know, got in trouble, had a troubled youth and got arrested multiple times, just was lost. But it wasn't until I got comfortable with myself, right, that I looked in the mirror and was like, you know what, Corey, you are black. Be yourself, man. Don't try and be somebody else. You have the culture. And now one of my superpowers, we were just talking about it before I got on, is one of my superpowers now is I can connect people and I can come from a different background. And I can connect all kinds of different cultures. If you go on my social media and you see me at all, you don't see just black. You don't see just white. You don't see just Asian. You see it all. It's a melting pot. And I have become a great bridge for all kinds of cultures, rich, poor, black, white. I don't care what it is. And so now, full circle, the color I focus on now, like my shirt, is green. Because green and the money, it's not about money. It's not about cars, clothes, jewelry, all that. It's about the tool that money creates to impact our lives and our community. So that's the trip I'm on now, is I'm all about creating that legacy and financial freedom. And how I'm doing that is through real estate investing, stock investing, angel investing. That's where it's at. So I just want a nice little 10-minute bio.
That was good. That was perfect. So, yeah. And so you're obviously not on the north side anymore, because is that your house behind you?
That is.
Yeah, that's
is.
Definitely not north side. Yeah.
I'm not north side no more, man.
Ain't no more 8-foot ceilings.
Nah, no more 8-foot ceilings, man.
So I just got to hop in on one piece you talked about, because, you know, as Emrick likes to say, us exotic brothers, you know, this experience of, I'd love to hear a little bit about how you think in your professional journey and in your wealth building journey, you've turned what at some point maybe in your life you saw as a disadvantage into an advantage. And I think that as somebody who equally grew up in a world where I didn't fit in anywhere, mom's from Texas, dad's from Africa, grow up in Somerville, go to school at a prep school somewhere else. Like, like everything was mixed up, right? Yeah. 6'5", black kid playing ice hockey. None of stuff made any sense. But so one way to look at that is, hey, I don't fit in anywhere. I don't have a home. I don't have a place to settle. I don't have a place to plant roots. I don't belong. Another way to look at it, it sounds like you were able to adopt a different perspective. Can you share with us a little bit about that perspective? Because I think this applies, doesn't have to be about race. All of us are in places where we feel we don't belong. Mm-hmm. And how we manage our lack of belonging is oftentimes what determines our altitude in those spaces.
Correct. Well, I mean, you hit the nail on the head, man. You know, growing up, white folks were like, man, this dude's too urban, you know? So my white friends didn't really accept me. And then my black friends were like, man, you too light. I can't take you where I'm going. So it was that kind of like misconception of like, hey, where do I plant roots? What side of the fence do I need to be on? I got to choose, right? And that was just the wrong way to look at it. So what kind of helped me on the wealth journey and figuring it out is, again, being exposed to different cultures, being exposed to different economics, I quickly realized that it's not a race thing, but money is one of the biggest driving forces, because if you're broke, it don't matter what color you are. And broke folks live the same way. If you're wealthy, wealthy folks live the same way. And I realized for me and my journey is that I could relate to the money aspect of life a lot better than just trying to pick a side of black or white. Now, look, I definitely represent my people wherever I go, but the economics of wealth and status and like home ownership and investing in things and having your money grow, that's a universal trait that flows through all of it. So where I planted my roots is trying to get people economically free.
You talked about getting on the real estate journey. How did you get into real estate in the first place?
Twofold. So my mom was a realtor. So growing up, she was a realtor and I was the kid that was going to open houses and I hated it. I never wanted to be a realtor. I was like, man, realtors don't do nothing.
I could tell by how you saying realtor. You must want to be a realtor.
Right? Disrespect. Yeah. Disrespect. Put some respect on my name, bro. I was like, man, I never want to do that. I want to be the street king out here with rims and all that. Like, I want to chase that. So anyways, obviously that didn't work out. But the light bulb moment happened for me as a teenager when I was doing construction. And the people I was working for were doing a lot of real estate investing. They were doing flips. They were doing rentals. And I knew what I was getting paid to do the work, right? So then as a curious kid, I've always been a quick learner, curious. And I would go talk to these owners that were paying us and be like, hey, what are you doing with this house? And they're like, you know, I'm renting it. I'm flipping it. And I'd be like, well, what'd you pay for it? And he'd tell me and I'd be like, well, I know how much it costs to fix it up. I see what you're selling it for. And then I saw my mom, how she sold houses. And I was like, man, light bulb moment. I want to get into real estate. I want to chase those dollars. So I got in real young. I mean, I think I got my license at 20 years old. By the time I was 23, I had 7 houses. I have 5 houses here in Minnesota, 2 in Las Vegas. By 2008, when the crash happened, I lost it all. So I had 7 foreclosures, bankruptcy, the whole 9, because I built it on a house of cards. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just chasing money, chasing the wrong things. But 2010 came back around, got married. I'm like, I know that this real estate game is where it's at. I know what the other side of the fence looks like. I know what death, destruction, rolling the streets. My friends were either locked up in jail or dead. I didn't have nobody left to support me. I was like, this real estate thing is where it's at. Most wealthy people I know or came across, majority of their wealth, the base of their wealth came from some type of real estate. And I was like, man, this is what I got to get into. So I started chasing the real estate game again.
And when you say chasing the real estate game, did you start selling real estate right away or did you start investing in real estate right away?
So I've always been heavy on the investment side. I always have been a believer in ownership, owning whatever you do, owning the business you do, owning the houses you live in, ownership. So I always wanted to be an investor. So I got back into the investment side through flipping houses to create capital because I had no money. I had no credit. I didn't go to college. I didn't have a degree. I had to figure out a way to create capital. So flipping was the way to go. I started getting real successful at flipping, and naturally, being a realtor, I started doing real estate. So other people started coming into my circle being like, Corey, I want to work with you as a realtor. So then I built up a book of business with real estate. And then as that got successful, more people got around me. A business partner of mine, Mike Spicer, we got together and we formed a real estate brokerage. Just me and him, independent, came together. And not as big as you, Unc, but we were at a time, we were the largest minority independent owned brokerage in Minnesota for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it was just me and him. No outside sources helping us, and we just grew it. But during that whole time of being a realtor and educating other agents and helping them grow, I've always been doing the investment stuff.
So you said something really there that fits in with the concept we've been talking about in the wealth building continuum. I call it create. Emmerich calls it critical mass. But this idea that to start on any wealth building journey, you got to do something that actually creates cash. So can you tell about how you thought about that and then what that enabled as you went forward?
Yep. So I've always been able to look at money as just a tool. I don't know if it's a gift I've gotten. I don't know if it's my belief system. I don't know if it's believing in God and all that, believing in the Bible. But I always realized that money was just a tool, that the more tools you got, the better you can be. You go to build a house and you only got a hammer, good luck. But if you show up to that crib with a whole truck full of tools, man, you're going to be able to build a house real quick. Well, I didn't have any money, so that meant I had no tools. So I had ideas and I had all kinds of dreams. But at the end of the day, I needed money, or I needed someone to invest in me money so I could go get it. So I looked at money as that tool, and I was like, what am I good at? What's my mindset? What can I do? And flipping houses was that way to create capital. And once I had that capital established, I could build on that to go now do my dreams and use that capital as tools to build businesses.
That's key, because Bo said the same thing. When you're talking about wealth, you got to build, you got to collect, and you got to be conscious of what's your true objective behind the money. I think a lot of us, we don't understand the objective behind having the money. We just believe that having the money is going to make everything happen. And I can tell y'all, and I'm being transparent, I've had money and I didn't know exactly what to do with it. And I spent it. So I mean, so I had money and I just spent it.
Yeah.
And there's some other things that I could have done with that money had I had a different thought process around building and growing. And that's where the whole idea about critical mass came in, because I understood that in certain areas, I didn't have the critical mass to do the things that I wanted to do. And so that whole idea, what you said, was money as a tool, I think is beautiful.
Yeah. And the more tools you got, the better you can be, as you know. And the cool thing with money is, man, you talked about it. You spent it or you lost or whatever. Man, you can always get that back. Smart people can get that back. People who grind and hustle and get around the right people, you can always get the money back as a tool. But if you just chasing the money and you ruining relationships on the way, man, you can't get them relationships back chasing that money.
So if somebody has the money, how do they know what to do with it, where to put the money, where to invest it? You didn't just know how to make the money. You actually knew what to do with the money when you got it. How would you help somebody figure out what to do with the money so they don't just spend it?
Well, I'd say don't do what I did. I got the money and I just figured it out on my own. You know, I didn't have a system around me to say, hey, Corey, now that you got this type of money, this is what you do with it. So my stuff was a lot of trial and error, you know, and, you know, I'm dating myself, but like YouTube wasn't back then. You know, I didn't have a YouTube channel I could go on and be like, yo, this is how you invest in a 401k. This is how you do tax planning. This is how you do a life insurance. So I had to figure out all that on my own through trial and error. But now if I were to tell somebody, I'd be like, man, you got to get a coach. You got to find someone who's doing what you want to do on a high level, get around them and say, hey, Unc, hey, man, coach me. Hey, Julia, how did you do that? I want to get around you. What can I do to add value to you so I can get the crumbs from your table so I can learn? Or invest in yourself, invest in your own abilities and say, I need to put money in myself by hiring a coach to tell me where to put my money.
It sounds so simple, Corey, but you would be shocked how many people will refuse to pay somebody to help them will instead spend so much money trying to figure it out themselves because they think they're smart. I'm smart. Yep. I don't need anybody to tell me anything. I don't need a coach. I know what to do. I'll figure it out. And they waste so much money listening to themselves instead of actually investing in themselves and going to trainings or going to get a coach or those types of things. It's a mindset. It's weird.
100%. I mean, I'm not saying I'm the best coach out there, but if I would have had a coach like me in the beginning of my journey, man, I know my business would be 10x.
course that I'm not necessarily saying I'm the best coach, but my number is 612.
Ah, 588. Hey, hit me up on the socials. Yeah, let's go. Yeah. But I would say this. I mean, all you guys on here are wealthy, so I'm preaching to the choir. So, I mean, it's just my own
little... No. I'm on here to be the moderator. I just am here to moderate.
In my opinion, the secret sauce to building wealth is simple. It starts with a P, passive income. S, streams, multiple streams of income. T, taxes. You figure out how to create passive income, multiple passive incomes, and you figure out how not to pay taxes on it. That's the secret to wealth.
Let's talk about that for a second. So you started out flipping houses.
Mm-hmm.
Not particularly passive.
Nope. Very active.
It's another stream.
Yep.
But you pay a lot of taxes on it too because you're paying income tax. So talk about how you went from this initial push to create dollars. How did what you invested in and what you did with your money evolve over time as you had more of it and your priorities changed?
Yep. So obviously flipping houses is super active, right? You got to be there every day. That is not passive at all. And so you can only do so many flips in a given period of time unless you build a big company and you do that. So it's kind of like being a realtor. You can only show so many houses. So I quickly realized, man, you got to get your dollars working for you, Corey, when you're asleep. Your money has to work as hard as you did to get it. So I was like, all right, sticking to real estate, I got into rentals. That was the first stop, getting into duplexes. So I would buy a rental property based on how good my flip business was. So the better I did at flipping, the bigger houses I could do. And then I started just playing Monopoly. I started off buying, you know, the orange ones and then put a house on the orange one and then, you know, buy the yellow ones and then put houses on that. So as my flip business grew, as my real estate business grew, I started investing my profits not into my cars, clothes, and jewelry, but into rental properties. And then I went from duplexes to 4 units to 6 units to 12 units. And also along that journey, I was like, hey, going through the crash of 08, all my funds were in real estate. I was not diversified. So the second thing I did is like, hey, Corey, don't make the same mistake you did before. A coach would have told me, but I had to figure it out and say, don't put all your eggs in the real estate basket, even though that's where you're really good. So I took on stocks and I love the stock game more than I love the real estate game. So I started adding stocks to my portfolio. Then I started adding life insurance to my portfolio. Then I started adding hard money, and now I have all kinds of different buckets. So over time, as my experience grew, my money grew, I start looking for different avenues for passive income.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit hometeam.com to learn more.
So you're just such a wealth of knowledge here. Like, let's break it down a little bit because you said so much there that's so deep. Like, okay, so you went from an active exercise of flipping and selling real estate, and you started to take some of that money and move it from cash flow from your efforts to cash flow from assets, right? That was your rental business. So let's talk about what was the mindset around that? Cash flow from my hard work. I'm investing in the flips, but I'm also doing a bunch of work. I'm spending time to do my real estate business. I'm making money. Now I'm going to put it over here. I bet when you bought the duplex, like, did you make the same amount of money you made from a flip?
Man, I was making like $500 a month.
Yeah, you're making nothing, right?
Nothing.
So how did you think? Because I think that's where a lot of people get stuck. They're like, yeah, I could just go sell another house and make $10,000. Why am I going to do all this work and make $300? I'm like, those $300 may be worth way more than the $100,000 you made over here.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on that. Because, yeah, the $500, man, I ain't getting wealthy out of that $500, man. No one's getting wealthy out of $500 cash flow, right? But the key was, man, that money came in while I was sleeping. Now, you have to manage it and do some stuff, but that was not free money, but it was like, I'm sleeping. Shoot, I made $500 this month. Debt reduction. Now, I could go on a whole little tangent about this, but to me, the most important aspect of owning rental properties besides leverage, and I'll talk about that in a minute, is debt reduction. Someone else is doing the heavy lifting. Someone else is paying down an asset that typically appreciates over time. So instead of looking at the 500, I looked at the debt reduction. I looked at the appreciation. I looked at the cost segregation on my taxes to get my taxes written down. And then the final one, going back full circle, I talked about I needed capital and I didn't have capital. Well, now I have an asset that I can leverage to create more capital. And guess who's paying for that? I'm not paying for that. A tenant is doing the heavy lifting. So even though that $500 cash flow seems like trash, it opened up so many doors for me for a financial perspective where now I can borrow more. I can leverage more. I have more assets. I have more retirement.
I love that. But no, but like, I think that's the big piece, right? You just said, when I have a rental property, I don't just have cash flow. I have debt reduction. I have an appreciable asset. And I have a whole bunch of tax strategies.
Yeah, we have that cost. I love the word. Yeah, Daniel taught me cost segregation, and I just like to say it whenever I can say it. So then you also have cost segregation. Yeah.
And then you came back around and said, hey, I can then leverage that asset
yep.
to pull out equity to do more stuff.
Well, full circle. So, you know, now where I'm at in my career, I still do flips, but now I do multi-million dollar flips. I typically buy something for around $1 million, sell it for $2 to $2.5 million. So like I'm doing really big flips that create a lot of money on the backside, but they're very intricate and very risky. Well, the reason the banks are like, Corey, we'll fund these deals for you is because I have a base of rental properties where they're like, Corey, if you mess up, yeah, we can take your property. But yo, we got something else that we can leverage. We have something else we can take. And I'm not trying to leverage all my rental properties in a high risk thing. But that base of rental covers all my monthly expenses. So if I never go sell another piece of property or do another flip, I'm taken care of. That's one. And now I have banks that are like, yo, we'll give you whatever amount of money because I got this base.
So let's talk about this for a little bit, because to me, there's a lot of talk about, you know, the wealth gap in America, and people have all sorts of ideas. But to me, fundamentally, the real hurdle in building wealth, if you're coming from nothing, is balance sheet. It's this idea that people want to give money to people who already have money. If you ain't got money, nobody wants to lend you money. I can tell you, when you got a lot of money, everybody wants to give you money. Right?
True.
They want to give you money because there's something that they can take from you,
yep.
which is your base of assets. And so Corey just talked about, I built up a base of assets, which allows me to leverage debt in a different way than I could when I didn't have assets. And nobody talks about this really that much. We just talk about how we couldn't get no money and nobody give us no money and nobody wanted to invest in my little company and nobody gave me the thing and I'm going to, okay, great. But when they invested in that other guy, they invested in the other guy because they were investing in generations of assets that had been built up
yep.
that gave mm-hmm. that lender some collateral that they could go take, right? And so how have you leveraged that just in your flipping business? Like, just let's take just the flipping business. Just talk about that. Like, how is it different today when you go to do a flip than it was when you started? And how does how do all those rentals and the stock portfolio and the life insurance, how does that play into that? And how do you leverage that today in your flipping business?
Yeah. So again, man, when my second go around getting back into real estate again, man, my credit score was like 400. Again, 7 foreclosures, bankruptcy. Like, I was not bankable at all. Like, it just wasn't going to happen. There wasn't nobody giving me money. And real estate was down. So I had to go out and find private money. I had to go out and find money sources outside of it. And when it came to flips, I realized real quick, there's three things you need. You need money to buy it. You need skills to fix it up. Or you need the product that makes money, right? And the most important one in that, most people think it's money. And the reality is, like you just talked about it, Bo, money's the easiest thing to find in this game. I didn't believe that, but now I 100% know that money's the easiest. The hardest thing in that transaction is a product that makes money. So I was really good at finding deals that made money, and I had the skills to figure out what to do with it. I had no money. But because I found the first two, I was able to find the money. I was able to find people, and I got an investor that gave me money to start my journey. Now, it was a small amount compared to what I do now. It was like a trial run. Let's see how you do, brother. Let's see how it goes. And as my journey, it started off small, and it was like a stair step. I slowly started getting better, slowly started getting more money, to now I have individuals that come to me all the time that say, hey, Corey, I see you're a bankable asset. I want to get my money exposed to real estate. Can I write you a check and get a rate of return? Mm-hmm. Right? And not only can I do that, but now I have banks that'll say, hey, Corey, we'll give you a line of credit up to $5 million in a given year. You can buy whatever you want. We will fund the purchase, fund the rehab if you put 20% down, and we'll let you do unlimited amount of deals as long as you don't pass $5 million. So I can literally go out, find private money if I wanted to, and fund almost whatever deal I want.
You said something really important that I think we hardly ever talk about on this podcast, but you started it off by talking about knowing who you were and being comfortable in who we are. Because what I'm hearing you say is, I was confident that I could find the product. I was confident in my skills, and that made people be able to trust you with these things. But it started out with you first believing in yourself, which is why Bo asked you to start about mindset, because you believed in yourself. And I think that's a conversation we really don't talk about often. I don't even know that we've ever had any reason to talk about it in that way. But you started off with, once I figured out who I was, you were off and running from there. That's a whole episode all in itself, is just figuring out who you are and being comfortable and confident in who you are. The other thing is that you are a risk taker. I'm getting that, you know, I'm getting the vibe that you don't mind taking a few risks here and there. And that's hard for people too. We had a whole episode. In fact, our second episode ever was about taking risks. And Daniel talked about how, because Daniel's a risk taker with his investments, but he also likes to go to Vegas, you know, and play the table. I played bingo one time in my life, and I have never gambled ever since, right? So I also don't have the same amount of investments or wealth because I'm not willing to take the risk that you all are taking. So can you talk a little bit about how you are willing to take those kind of risks? Because some people will say, I don't want to take a risk. If I lose it all, I can't recover from that.
For sure.
But again, being the fact that you did lose it all and you did recover, but yeah.
Couple of answers to that. But one, the last part was one of the most important. Like, yeah, I lost it all and built it out 10 times better than it was the first time. And if you look at a lot of wealthy billionaires who have filed bankruptcy, when they came back the second time, they were more wealthy. You know, so it's not about the risk. It's about up here. And maybe for blind luck or bad decisions or fill in the blank, something didn't go right. It's not because you weren't smart. It's not because the risk was bad. It just, you know, stuff happens. But as far as the risk goes, man, one, we talked about earlier, but poor people spend, you know, so Unc was talking about spending. Hey, I got a lot of money I spend. Well, then you got to go back and make all that money again. Two, middle class, where most people, most Americans are middle class, is we save. And we hope that saving enough money will get us to retirement. And we hope that by the time we hit 65, 70, we magically save this money that's going to work. And the reality is you'll never be wealthy being a saver. That's just what it is. Mm-hmm. But wealthy people, they invest. So I realized real quickly, Corey, do you want to be a realtor or do you want to be wealthy? Do you want to be a saver or do you want to be wealthy? In order to be wealthy, generational wealth will not come unless you're willing to give up money.
I think this is so important for all of us. It's what, you know, in our little wealth building continuum, it's the trade time and talent and money for money. Yeah. There are too many times, at least in my journey, I encounter folks, talented folks with great ideas who are unwilling to put their money at risk or have not taken the time to make any money that they could put at risk, yet they want other people to back their idea. And the reality is that you have to know what strength you have. You're always going to have to pay for the downside risk. As entrepreneurs, we think about what we could make. Banks, money people, they think about what they could lose.
Yeah.
And as long as you don't have something to lose, people don't invest in your dream. And correct. That's just a fact. It's a harsh fact. It's an unfair fact because you don't have generations of stuff to lose if you're starting out with nothing. Right? But it is the reality of the American banking system. It's the reality of capitalism. People invest in you when you have something to lose, not when you think you have something that you can go gain.
Hence the term skin in the game.
Hey, yeah. Skin in the game. Hey,
skin in the game.
How much skin in the game you got?
Yeah, that's good, though. Yeah.
And I want to touch on that for a second, Bo. Like, that is like 100% the American system. You know, I don't want to get too far down that road, but like there is a blueprint out there. There is a game plan out there and it's rigged. It is a rigged game, especially for minorities. It's a rigged game. And, you know, once you learn the playbook, once you learn the rules and you take off a certain lens, I mean, we all look at life through a different lens. We all come from different ways. But once you say, hey, what is the playbook out there? Instead of getting mad at the playbook, instead of always fighting the playbook, adapt, learn the playbook, and then play the game. Otherwise, like you just said, Bo, then you will be the one always asking for money and being like, how come no one's giving me the money, and being mad, and then start filling in all kinds of other blanks why you're not getting the money. Versus you just said, the reality is, hey, bro, you want me to invest $100,000 in your business? You've never invested a dollar of your own money in anything. And you're single, unmarried, and you rent. If I give you this 100 grand, how am I going to get it back if you lose it? You've never invested money. Why am I going to give that to you? Now, they might say, oh, it's because I'm black, or it's because I'm white, or it's because I'm Asian, or it's because I don't have a good job. And it's like, no, the game plan shows that you are not a bankable asset. You are risky.
And let's be real about it, right? Corey's right. It's a rigged game. Because if you've got generations of wealth, then you have something to lose that you never earned. Right?
Right.
But that is the reality of how system works. You can be mad about it or you can go figure it out. And I think the more we can adopt that mindset, I mean, you know, you heard in our other episode where I talked about go invest. Like, we took an investment strategy that fundamentally is based on the racism of America. We now have growth and we need housing and we need places. And therefore, there's a value differential because we created tracks and roads and freeways and stuff that divides America. Now, we could be mad about it. We should be mad about it. But we should go, we know it. We lived it better than most people. You understand it better than other people understand it. And so if you get out of the emotion about what it is and you accept that it is that way, then you have an opportunity to potentially mitigate some of the damage that it does by going out and figuring out how to build business around that.
But you know what, Bo? The big thing with that, though, is a lot of us, and I'm saying us because I'm included in this category right here. Just like you said, we don't really see the value. Sometimes we think about that neighborhood or that area will never do this. And we underestimate the value because we haven't done enough homework. And once I started to figure out the idea between the railroad tracks, the highways, right, the warehouses, and what the value of warehouses really is, there was a devaluation of what that area could be.
You don't get me started, but like this idea that wealth building's aspirational. So people often get resources and they shoot for the thing that they didn't have or they didn't know. And for us, a lot of times that is, oh, I didn't have access to this. So now that I got money, I got to go get the thing I didn't have access to. But I actually may be well positioned to crush it in the thing I know better than anybody else, rather than abandoning and undervaluing that which I know because it's familiar to me. And because I think of it as where I used to be, I grew up there. That neighbor can't be good. I had to get the hell out of there. And so now I finally came up on the other side and I finally bought a house over there. And now I got a different house. And you know, that old house your grandma lived in might be worth way more.
Right.
That little cheap new home builder house you overpaid for out there.
100%.
Yeah, I mean, and even speaking to people who aren't investors, who aren't very well, people who are first-time home buyers have that idea all the time. They'll say, I don't want to buy. You'll know, Corey, I don't want to buy a house on the north side. You've been living on the north side for 25 years, but now you don't want to own the house that you've been living in, you know. And so it's even hard to get people even into the conversation of starting to own something because they're so against your point, Bo. I want to buy something to get out of here. You don't actually have enough money sometimes to buy it and get out of there. You have enough money to buy what you have and then build from that. But it's so hard to get people to even buy in our own communities sometimes because they want to get out.
Yeah. And part of it is, you know, the social media conundrum, the HGTV conundrum, where like we are inundated with what we think wealth is. Mm-hmm. Bentleys and cars and granite and stainless and, you know, walk-in closets and huge elaborate, you know, owner suites. And that's wealth. And the reality is wealth is health. It's legacy. It's mm-hmm. family. A lot of times it's not necessarily money. It's like, how are you impacting your community? That's wealth.
Relationships.
Hey, you know? Relationships.
Even access. Hey. I do not have a lot of money, but I could pick up the phone. If I could pick up a phone call Bowman Keating, I could pick up the phone and call Emmerich Peace. I have more wealth than most people by just being able to have access to people who, you know, without having the money at all.
And that's the thing that I always say. Relationships will take you places money can't.
Right. That's 100%. Wealthy.
You can have money, but that doesn't guarantee you access to people who you have relationships in. And the same thing is, it's
you would answer the phone for me, wouldn't you, Bo?
All the time.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna make sure.
And those crazy texts, too.
No, but that thing that you said about who you can pick up the phone and call, that's real. It's the same thing what Corey was talking about, and Bo said, I mentioned it also. It's the circles that you're in, the people who know you. It's not necessarily about the people who you know. It's about who knows you.
Oh, yeah. That's a form of wealth, to Corey's point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a huge form of wealth. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's probably the greatest wealth, you know, because like, let's say if someone out here is friends with Jeff Bezos, right? Or someone who a CEO at Apple, and they're like, hey, I can connect you with the richest person in the world. You could be the brokest dude out here. Mm-hmm. But that one lunch with Jeff Bezos, that connection could change everything. And if that person you were connected to gave you that plug, that is wealth you can't even quantify.
We all one relationship away from something special. We just got to figure out where that relationship is.
It's also, though, why I would always encourage people to look beyond the trappings of wealth. Mm-hmm. Like, our industry is filled with the trappings of wealth. Like, we have trappings of wealth everywhere. We have our top producers. We have fancy videos on Instagram showing, you know, people saying they're flying private. And it's become almost quite humorous to me, but it's actually really scary because I've had so many talented young brothers and sisters come to me and completely confused about who actually has money. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually had a group of people say, I'm not sure, like we really looked up to you and Emmerich. We want to follow this other guy because we don't see y'all flying private. We don't see you, you know, with security guards. I said, you have no idea. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to have any idea if that's how you judge what wealth is. First of all, it may have nothing to do with money, as you guys said. And second of all, I'm guessing the guy who can buy you six times over isn't flossing with some fancy jewelry and a Lambo in the driveway, because that's not what those people do. That's not what they're focused on. That's people who want to show you that they're wealthy, which usually means they're broke or they just got a little come up. They got a little come up and they're trying to show that. And so I am actually, this is like, I don't know how to articulate it well, but I am concerned for the next generation coming up, especially in our industry, that there's been a period of time where people have no idea and don't actually spend the time to understand. So don't assume somebody's. I can meet Corey and say, hey, the brother, he talk funny. He got the crazy hair. I bet you he can buy you seven times over. Hey, and you are making some judgment based on nothing.
Well, that's because wealth is boring. Mm-hmm. True wealth is boring. You meet anyone who's worth $5, $10, $20, $100 million, and you look at their lifestyle, unless they're like a social media star or something like that. But the people who are unknown, their life is boring. I was just in Florida with some family friends, vacation, staying at one of our family friends' houses that's on the ocean. So check that out. He lives on the ocean. He's worth, I don't even know, north of $10 million. The car he drives is like a 2002 Ford Flex. And you probably don't even know what that is. It's a beater ride. And he could buy me 10 times over. He doesn't wear jewelry. Do look sometimes like he's just bummy homeless. I'm like, but he got more money than everybody. And his passive income is hundreds of thousands of dollars a month. And he don't got no Rolexes, no chains, no sneaker collection he's showing off, nothing.
There was an episode, and I remember it was episode 13, Bo, because I reference it a lot of times, where we talk about when people get money, they buy those fancy things. They buy the Jordans. They buy the jewelry because they want to show their wealth. And Bo, you talked about, you know, even and even Corey, part of what you came on saying, I didn't know who I was, you know, people trying to show their worth. They're trying to outwardly demonstrate that they are worthy. You know, and they, but you talked about it in episode 13, and I reference it all the time because that's exactly what people are trying to do. They're trying to show that they're worthy. Yeah.
I had to get comfortable because I had a lot of judgment in it. I had to get comfortable and understand that that's to bring this full circle, this is where Corey started, right? We don't buy cars and have jewelry. We do that because we want to belong to something that we don't belong to. So it's back to Corey's original point. I can spend my whole life trying to put the trappings together of artificial belonging, or I can sit in who I really am. And when I get comfortable to sit in who I really am, in the midst of a world who might be telling me that who I am is supposed to be broke and supposed to be nothing and supposed to not have value, there's a tremendous amount of power that comes from that, right? And that's mm-hmm. where I think the power of what Corey started with. When I figured out who I was, I no longer had to take my precious resources and spend them trying to show the world that I belong. I was able to spend them to multiply them to build the life that I wanted to live in.
The key is right now, and we've heard this before, people judge their insides by other people's outside. Because mm-hmm. the people who you think really have it really don't got it. You think they got it, but they don't really got it. They don't got it. And they're basing everything around who they believe that they are based on what they see other people doing or having. And it's ultimately a facade.
Well, Corey, I want to thank you for being on this episode. This has been great. This has been fantastic. And you know what's wild, y'all? I have lived in this town for 30 years, with the exception of the 5 years I was in Texas. And I lost all my money the same time you lost all your money. And I did a lot of work with Mike Spicer. And do y'all know, I never met Corey until I think like a month ago, maybe. And that was even on accident. You came to speak to Andrew and I happened to be sitting there eating lunch with him. Yeah. But I never met this guy. But I hope that my wealth will transcend to a relationship with you so that when I call you, or as Bo says, send crazy text messages, you'll answer the phone, because you are a wealth of information. And with that, I made a joke. I said that, you know, you're a coach, call you at 612. But the reality is you actually are a wealth coach. You actually do have a wealth coaching company. Can you quickly plug that and give us your information for the people listening?
Hey, man. Thanks again for having me on, by the way. I really do appreciate it. As you guys can see, all of us on here, including myself, we have a heart for this. We have a passion for this. Okay. And we're trying to affect change. You know, we can lead people to water. We can't make them drink. But I'm going to keep leading them to the water, you know. But that's a segue to Legacy Wealth Group. That's the name of the community that I created. It's called Legacy Wealth Group. And it's a community of people that want to create financial freedom. And within that, you have people that are just on there having discussions just like this, where that is free. That is me leading you to the water and you need to drink. The key is a lot of people come to that water and then they just bounce. Uh-huh. But if you put a gate around that water and you charge someone $10 to get in to drink that water, the reality is that they're probably going to start to drink that water. So yes, I have a paid coaching platform, and that's a qualifier. Are you serious about getting in? Are you serious about changing this? But yes, I coach people all the time now. I mentor people. I'm still in the game heavy doing investments. So I'm not some guy just talking about principles and, you know, hey, this is how you could do it.
I know you are. I saw the check you posted on social media the other day. Yeah.
But no, Legacy Wealth Group, join legacywealthgroup.com. Check me out on social media, The Real Corey Wright on all the platforms. But I have a heart for this. Yeah. And I coach people on how to create that wealth.
All right, cool. One last thing you want to leave the audience with. If there was one thing you wanted them to get from this whole conversation, what would it be?
Take action. Take action. So many people just, hey, I'm going to buy a house, but rates are too high. I'm going to buy an investment property, but I ain't got it. And year after year, people wake up, they look in the mirror, and they're in the same spot they've always been, and nothing ever changes. At some point, take action. Get out there and do the thing.
That's good. Thank you so much, Corey, for being on. Thanks, Bo. Thanks, Emmerich. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see y'all next week. Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.